Notorious RBG engages in fat shaming and shows her R-rated comedic chops. A Texas inmate will soon be released after being sentenced to life in jail without the possibility of parole for stealing $50 from a bakery, and Rob Lowe gets trolled by his own son for his legal naivety. These stories, plus my interview with ethics funny man Stuart Teicher in this week's Debriefing of the Law. This past week was a sight for liberal sore eyes everywhere as notorious RBG, that's right, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, made several public appearances. Now, this debunked a growing suspicion that this upcoming Supreme Court term would be a sequel to Weekend at Bernie's. No need to prop her up. She is alive and well. Seriously, if something ever did happen to her, I'm guessing an announcement would be made that, due to Justice Ginsburg's health, she'll be working from home for the foreseeable future. Yeah, in a frozen carbonite contraption. Move over, Han Solo. You have company. But here's guessing that she'll be kept alive for a very, very long time. I am sure her medical directive will say, you better darn well resuscitate. There'll be no DNR anywhere near her directive. And when I say she is alive and well, I mean she was on fire. She is one funny high court jester. First, she spoke to students at the University of Buffalo. They bestowed upon her an honorary degree, which is nice. I gotta admit that that's a nice gesture. Finally, she can do something with herself, you know, do something with her life. Her parents can now finally be proud of her accomplishments. Well, during these appearances, she reminisced on her career where she has become a cultural icon. You can imagine when she was entering the legal profession after her law school days, her career goals could not have included being referenced with a rap name. I cannot think of another justice who carries a rap name, but hey, she is Notorious RBG. And here are her thoughts on that nickname.
It was beyond my wildest imagination that I would one day become the Notorious RBG.
Oh, that's pretty cool to get a nickname. I mean, she's notorious. She's RBG. She's the Notorious RBG. Faster than any argument or logical conclusion, she's able to leap over any constitutional provision with a single bound. She is the Notorious RBG. But I do wonder if the other justices, do they get jealous? I mean, they don't have cool nicknames. Well, I am nothing if not compassionate for the Ivy League unfortunates, so I have come up with some nicknames for the other justices. Let's start with the Chief. Chief Justice John Roberts. He's easy. He's the top dog. Nicknames should come easy for the big kahuna. So Big Dog, the Big Gipper, the Chief, Benedict Arnold, all easy ones to pick from, plenty to choose from. Hey, it's not a tax. It's a penalty. I still haven't forgiven you for that one, Chief. All right, moving on here. How about Feel the Burn Briar? Now, if you don't get this reference, go to our show notes or our Facebook page. I will post a picture of Justice Stephen Breyer side by side with Mr. Burns from The Simpsons. And tell me, are they not one and the same guy? But if that one doesn't do it for you, how about the meditator? It looks like he is in mid-meditation even when he is asking questions from the bench. All right, moving on. Justice Kagan. Let's just call her Pat the gym teacher. Hey, Pat. She reminds me of my kindergarten grade school teacher, Mrs. Pat. All right, moving on. Gorsuch. Gorsuch, you gore suck. All right, well, how about this one? If that's too harsh, how about the Big Mayberry or just Andy for short? All right, Justice Alito. All right, I got a nickname for you. The Big Ass. Now, you think I'm swearing? No, it's called a donkey. Clean it up. Seriously, just look at his opinion in Collins v. Virginia. And in that opinion, he called the majority a big ass. Look it up if you don't believe me. It's right there in Collins v. Virginia. That guy has some guts in calling out his other Supreme Court colleagues. All right, moving on. Justice Clarence Thomas. Let's call him The Silent J, Charlie C, or how about Soda Pop? All right, Justice Sotomayor, let's just call her the mayor. I don't have a good one for her. The mayor kind of sounds like her name. Maybe Curly? Yeah, if you have a good one for her, let me know. Well, last but certainly not least, we have Justice Brett Kavanaugh. Now, this one should be easy. Let's call him Killer B for Brett, beer, and of course, boofing. Poor K. I mean, he's never going to live that one down as long as he lives. So there you go. Jealousies can be put aside. We have nicknames for all of you. Well, during her public appearances last week, Notorious RBG then engaged in some speech that, well, let me just say on behalf of all of the vertically challenged everywhere, I am offended. Yeah, for those of us who have never learned the art of saying no thank you when presented with a dessert tray, let me say there is no need to engage in fat shaming Notorious RBG. But that is what she does. In front of an audience of over 13,000 people, she made fun of us rather non-linear people. Now, don't believe a Supreme Court justice would ever engage in body shaming? Well, let's roll the tape.
Viewing the court, there was something wrong with the picture. The public would see these eight rather well-fed men coming on the bench.
Well-fed men? I do like how she was able to sugarcoat being fat. My, you're looking well-fed today. I mean, RBG, that's how you refer to cattle that you want to get top dollar for. That's what you call your prize pig who's looking to take the top honor at the county fair. But if you post your picture on Match.com, in your Match.com profile, and your match tells you, my, you look well-fed. Yeah, that's not a compliment. All right, RBG, I will accept your personal apologies in person. I will be presenting in Atlanta the end of September. Feel free to join me on stage. And if I go on a crash diet between now and then, I'm sure there will be room. We can squeeze you in on stage beside me. I will take your public apologies there. All right, well, finally, the Notorious won the crowd over with her R-rated sex jokes. Now, by now, you know better than to doubt me. Let's go to the tape and listen to her best impersonation of Chris Rock live.
Why I stopped using sex and started using gender. It was a secretary I had at Columbia Law School who said, I'm typing these briefs and these speeches for you, and the word sex juts out all over. She said, don't you know that the audience you are addressing, their first association of the word sex is not what you want them to be thinking about.
That, my friends, is why they do not allow the Supreme Court proceedings to be televised. Once you put a camera in front of these guys and gals, who knows what you are going to get? David Chappelle, Kathy Gifford, cue the censors and the bleepers now. Last week, a judge ordered that Alvin Kennard, an Alabama inmate, should be released from jail, even though he was serving a sentence of life in prison without the possibility of parole. Now, that's a pretty stiff sentence. To my teenage boy, that's almost as bad as a week with no Wi-Fi. I mean, this is pretty serious stuff. So what did Alvin do to deserve this punishment? He stole $50 from a bakery. You heard me right. He stole $50 from a bakery. That's it. Not $50 plus the last loaf of olive bread. Not $50 plus the last cream cheese croissant. Just $50. For this crime, he was sentenced to life in jail without the possibility of parole. You see, Alabama had passed a law known as the three strikes rule and you are out. Now, this is not to be confused with the three strikes and you are out rule that is applied to my Kansas City Royals hitters. Apparently, we don't understand the point of baseball is to put the ball in play and make contact. You're paid millions of dollars to do one thing, put your bat on that ball and put it into play. No, this is a different three strikes rule and you are out. In Alabama, if you are found guilty of 3 criminal acts, then you are out of society. Lock you up, throw away the key. You are done. And before he stole this $50 from a baker, he broke into a gas station and stole some items. And so when he was convicted of stealing $50, he was sentenced under the 3 strikes rule and he was out. And he got life in jail without the possibility of parole. Now, I must admit, when I first read this story, I thought, can they count in Alabama? I mean, I know some people say their education system is wanting, but come on, this is just simple arithmetic. And last I checked, that's only 2. You have the gas station break-in, and you have the $50 theft. But apparently this gas station break-in constituted multiple separate crimes, and so it counted as 2 strikes. Well, the person who matters, the judge, he counted it as 3 strikes in any event, and there was no instant replay official to rebuff this count. And so Alvin received life in jail without the possibility of parole. Turns out Alabama kind of resembles the lax parent who can't keep an established discipline for their kids. You know what I'm talking about, the parent who constantly waffles on the punishment. Now listen, Timmy, if you don't come down here right now, you will be grounded for 1 week. Okay, I'm only giving you this one warning. Okay, last time, seriously, I will not be giving you any more than 15 more warnings, and that is it. You come down here this instant or within the hour, and I am serious. Well, you know the type. Maybe you are that parent. I think at times I resemble that parent. But in 2013, the Alabama Sentencing Commission adopted a new guidelines that allow judges to, well, revisit past cases and extend some mercy where mercy was due. And someone thought that life in jail for stealing $50 seemed a bit out of whack, and so he is being released soon. Now, I love a good natured ribbing, especially when it comes to my sons. I am an expert trash talker with them, which usually comes back to haunt me. When you are on the backside of 40, yeah, it's not a good idea to trash talk with your teenage boys on the basketball court. It's just not going to end well for you. Now, not only can my boys take some ribbing, they also, well, they can dish it out. I may not have a Michael Jordan when it comes to athletic ability on my hands, but my boys are Jordan-esque when it comes to the verbal slam. The family values, they're important, and in my family, we can trash talk. You know, you raise a child right, they say. Well, apparently the Lowe family is no different. Rob Lowe's sons knew how to troll their old man. Well, here's what happened. Rob Loeb, the famous actor who starred in The West Wing, amongst many other shows and movies, likes to chronicle his life on Instagram. And his son, Johnny, likes to troll his pops for his post. For example, in one post, Rob Loeb posted a picture of him and 2 of his buddies playing golf. It was captioned, "Threesome," to which his son, Johnny, posted, "Yeah, I don't condone this caption." Yeah, that's bad imagery for the kiddos, not good. Well, in another post, Rob had obviously just finished a workout, and so he was dripping with sweat. And his post is of him in his office in front of some framed certificates with a caption, "If you're not wet from your workout, you're probably not working hard enough." Well, Johnny, always quick to point out his dad's self-love, responded, "The subtle art of taking a selfie in front of your Emmy nominations." Yes, his dad was caught in the old humble brag, and his son was quick to point that out. All right, in another one, the West Wing actor posted a pic of him hugging a rock, and it looks like he is rock climbing and is defying death with this climb, a la Tom Cruise in the opening scene in Mission Impossible 2. His caption, "Hanging out there in Cape Town, hashtag adventure, hashtag Africa," to which Johnny responded, "This may be your finest piece of acting." Ouch, if that were my boy, I'd be proud. Nice work. Apples usually don't far to fall from the tree. But my favorite troll is where Rob posted what he thought was a legal notice on Instagram. I'm sure you're familiar with the idea. A ruse goes around that unless you repost a certain warning, Instagram or Facebook will have free rein to steal all of your private photos. To those of us with law degrees, or really anyone who has watched at least half an episode of Law & Order, yeah, we all know that such reposting is usually just a way to say, I am old and naive. Well, please don't ever let me alone with a Cutco salesperson, because I will soon be broke. But Rob Lowe reposted that warning. His post said, with this statement, I give notice to Instagram that it is strictly forbidden to disclose, copy, distribute, or take any other action against me based on this profile and or its contents. The content of this profile is private and confidential information. This post went on to state, all members must post a note like this. If you prefer, you can copy and paste this version. If you do not publish a statement at least once, it will be tacitly allowing the use of your photos as well as the information contained. Again, this is the modern equivalent of the kick me now sign put on a person's backside. This is the guy you want to try your gullible jokes on. Hey, did you hear that gullible is not in the dictionary? These people provide endless hours of humor and entertainment. So did his son finally have compassion on his old man? Nah, this was too good to ignore. Instead, Johnny responded with a hand to the forehead emoji and this slam. You literally have a son who went to law school at Matthew Edward Lowe. Come get him. Yes, and while you're at it, take the car keys as well, and do you know of any good homes? Well, as a lawyer, I can attest that at times, we get the craziest legal questions. People assume they have good cases. I have gotten my fair share of idiotic inquiries, like the guy who called me wanting my advice on this website that claims you don't have to pay taxes to the IRS. Their theory is that one only has to pay income tax by consensually engaging in excise taxable activity called a trade or business, which is defined as a public office in the U.S. government. To which my response was, yeah, if we're going to continue having this conversation, I'm going to need a rather large retainer and charge a billable hour. I mean, the pain and suffering kind of retainer for putting up with extreme client BS. And in case you didn't get the message, yes, you have to pay income tax to the IRS. Just trust me on this one, neither the IRS nor any court will ever say, wow, that's a clever argument. I guess this year the government won't be able to collect any money from anyone. Yeah, it's not going to happen, no matter how clever your argument is. You're going to have to pay taxes. Well, our guest today is Stuart Teicher, one of the funniest men in law. He is an expert on lawyer ethics. Now, spare me your military intelligence and jumbo shrimp jokes. Lawyers do have ethics. For example, if a client accidentally gives a lawyer two $100 bills that were accidentally stuck together, does he tell his partners? Again, these are real issues. Well, without further ado, here is Stuart Teicher. Today we have as our guest one of the funnier guys in the legal profession. When you think of lawyers and jokes, Stuart Teicher should immediately come to mind. He is also a prosecutor of attorneys who do bad things. That's right. If an attorney commits an ethical violation, Stuart is on the mob squad, the task force to take that attorney down. So it's with a certain amount of hilarious expectation and trepidation that I welcome Stuart Teicher. Stuart, welcome and thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much, Joel. That is the first time that anyone has referred to me as both a clown and a bad guy in the same sentence. Well done.
I went to your website. I Googled you before you came on the show. And on your website, it says you are a CLE performer. Since you mentioned a clown, I have to admit, this sounds like if I attended one of your classes, yeah, I would expect to see some juggling.
Well, listen, here's the reason I came up with that title. And it took me a really long time to come up with the right title, honestly. My elevator pitch, if you will, is I call myself a CLE performer because I know we need to get critical content. But wouldn't it be a novel idea if we could stay awake in the process? And that's what I've always done. And the reason I got into this business is because I remember when I was practicing, I practiced in New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania probably for about 20 years. And towards the end of my active practice, I remember saying to myself, I was sitting at a CLE ethics program myself, and I said, okay, I'm done counting the ceiling tiles in this room. Right. Where is the ladder to the roof of the building so that I can hoist myself off into traffic?
That's right.
And I've tried to do better ever since.
Hey, now, for you non-attorneys listening, let me tell you, what Stuart just said is exactly right. I still remember sitting in a class. Half the class had USA Today's. Now, these are newspapers. It used to be back in the old day. You actually would have your news on actual paper. And they would just have the paper up and out. And they weren't even hiding the fact they were not even paying attention. I mean, it was just the worst kept secret in the legal profession.
Yeah, and the other half had their files out and they're working on a motion or something like that, writing down or typing on their computer or something like that. Now everyone just looks down at their phone or their computer.
That's right. You see their foreheads. Well, so what you're saying is no lounge singing. That's not the kind of performer that you are. You are a CLE performer. Now, your mission is, I read, my mission is to build safer, better lawyers and happier professionals. Is this the $6 million attorney?
Yeah, we can make you better, faster, stronger. You know, we're all Steve Austin, and we go up into space.
Now, Stuart, I got to tell you, you just warmed my heart. I appreciate what you just said. You got my reference. I appreciate that.
Yeah, we're both old, Joel. That's the reason.
I was speaking to a group recently, the Federal Bar Association, and I spoke to a group of young attorneys. We're talking 25 to 30, and I have in my presentation this story where I talk about an attorney who pulled the Fred Sanford. Now, for I assume you know what I mean by pulling
course,
the Fred Sanford, right?
Yeah.
What is it?
It's a big one. Listen.
That's right. You're clutching your heart, saying, oh, Elizabeth, this is the big one. You hear
here
that? I'm dying. I'm coming to join you.
Yep.
This class of 25 to 30-year-olds had blank stares on their faces. Like, what in the heck are you talking about, Fred Sanford? Who is this guy?
Oh, Lamont, you big dummy.
That's right. So at least you're from my generation. You got
that's
the $6 million reference there. But that's what you do. You build a bigger, safer, stronger attorney.
That's what I try to do. You know, I put a little bit of a moniker on my website and I call it the Lawyer Survival Center, you know, and I try to post not only stuff about ethics issues, but I try to post things about, you know, non-law issues, nice escapes, you know, healthy escapes, ethics concerns, professionalism concerns, just anything that could make lawyers better is kind of where my head is at. Because I remember myself when I was in, you know, practice, I remember feeling like I was struggling sometimes. And I sort of devoted my career to helping lawyers, you know, both survive and thrive. So those of us who are struggling, I want to be able to give, you know, like the stick that they can grab onto while they're floating away. And those of us who are not struggling, what can you do to take the next step up in your career? It's about ethics, behavior, but also, you know, keeping our heads screwed on straight.
Now, Stuart, for the attorneys and non-attorneys that are listening, I want to encourage you to go to Stuart's website because it is hilarious. Stuart, I had no idea you were so funny, and you speak the truth. I watched your clip recently on the air travel lie. Go ahead and explain what the air travel lie is, and also give us your website.
Well, my website is my name. It's stuartteicher.com. It's StuartTeicher.com, no spaces, just StuartTeicher.com. It's funny you mentioned that, Joel, because I was speaking yesterday and I finished with that clip. I played that clip for everybody. When you sit on an airplane, I start off by saying is that I discovered the biggest lie in all of air travel. And the biggest lie in all of air travel is the exit row consent. That's what it is. You know, when the flight attendant walks up to you and says, I'm going to, in the event of an emergency, we're going to need you to assist us in removing that door and helping people out of the plane. I'm going to need a verbal yes. And everyone says, yes, yes, yes. And it's all garbage.
Right.
Because nobody believes it. No one's going to do it. You aren't listening. And but you know, they always say, you got to make sure you read the placard. No one reads the placard.
I know. That and is the biggest lie right there. If you read what placard?
And then there's a reason for it, because everyone knows that the minute you read that placard, the plane will crash. That's the way it works, you know? So I always, I was just saying how that's such a big lie. And really what they should do is change, you know, what they say and what we say. They should say, are you willing and able to help us in the event of emergency? And what we should say is, well, no, not really. But the truth is, I'm willing to jeopardize the life and safety of everyone on this plane for another 2 inches of legroom.
That is right. Now, what I also loved about your clip, this is so true. This actually has happened to me, where I have my headphones on and they ask me a question and then I take my headphones out and just say, yeah. And then put my headphones right back on. I have no idea what they just said. I just nodded my head because I wanted to get back to my my podcast or whatever it was I was listening to.
And there's no way you're moving out of the exit row.
That's right. I'm a big guy. I need that exit row.
That's right.
Now, Shawnee, Stuart, you don't have this problem, but I'm a big guy. And so when I fly Southwest, which is my preferred airline, there it's just a cattle call. You can sit wherever you want. And when you're a 6'3" guy who's, you know, not exactly, it looks like I have not passed on too many dessert trays in my past. I'm walking down. I can see the fear in the eyes of everyone. Please don't sit by me. Please don't sit by me. So, yeah, I need that exit row, not only for my benefit, but for the benefit of the other passengers.
It's nice that you're thinking of others, Joel. That's very sweet of you. You know what would end up happening is you and I would end up sitting next to each other. That's the way it works. Because I'm not as tall as you. I'm about 6 foot, but still, I got, you know, we got the shoulders. So we sit, we're the ones that always end up right next to each other on those airplanes. And there's two, you know, like 5 foot tall, dainty individuals next to us, sitting next to us. But we are crammed in with our shoulders touching.
Oh, I love it. So yeah, definitely. Your site has a lot of great, hilarious tidbits there, videos and also audio. Well, I also found from your site that going back to your class and what you do, you teach lawyers, but you say they're all delivered in my own captivating and very New Jersey, and New Jersey is in quotes, style. And then you put in italics, if you know what I'm saying. Now, Stuart, I think I know what you're saying. Does that mean it's not exactly G-rated? Are you saying you like to swear a lot?
You should be proud of me, Joel. You know why? Because we've been speaking now for several minutes, and I haven't dropped the F-bomb once.
My editor would be very happy, though I might put in some beeps just for the fun of it.
And but that's what I mean. When I say my New Jersey style, I'll be honest with you. When I go off script, I get a little bit – I don't want to say that I curse, because I don't think that would be professional. But I straddle the line of professional language at times. But it's only because, you know, when you're from Jersey, you're very direct. You're very passionate. And because we have elevated the F word to everyday vernacular, your language is a little blue sometimes, you know?
That's right. Now, you just have to be creative in how you curse. That's what I have found out. I love to follow the Supreme Court in this last term, and there's a case called Collins v. Virginia, which is a case where some guy stole a crotch rocket motorcycle and was speeding down the interstate at 140 miles per hour, you know, and some cops were chasing him. The cops couldn't keep up. Well, later on, this guy posted pictures of that crotch rocket on his Facebook page. It showed exactly where the stolen motorcycle was. Well, nonetheless, the issue before the Supreme Court was whether or not the cops could go take pictures of that motorcycle because of that Facebook picture without a warrant. And so that was the issue. Well, the majority held that, they had to go get a warrant. They could not go on that person's property, even if it was on the front lawn, and take a picture of that motorcycle. To which Justice Alito said, if that's the law, then the law is an ass. And so, hey, he was able to swear because he wasn't technically swearing. He was just citing a Charles Dickens character, and so he was able to get away with it in that context.
There you go.
You got to be smarter in how you swear. So. All right, you wrote a book.
I did.
And tell us, it's Navigating the Legal Ethics and Social Media and Technology. Tell us about that book.
Well, you know, when I wrote it, it was a couple of years ago. When I wrote it, the idea of ethics and technology was a really, really hot topic. And interestingly enough, of course, it's still a hot topic. And I tell people that it's probably the one thing that's most requested as far as, you know, program titles and topics are concerned. And I for a while, I thought that I was going to spend my entire career writing and talking about ethical issues with technology. But luckily, lawyers are still sleeping with their clients. So there's this. I mean, luckily, maybe not for society, but for me, because, you know, I mean, I still got other stuff to talk about. But when I wrote that book, it was new. It was a new idea. And over the years, the issues have only grown. And in fact, I have a law review article that's coming out next week, I think. The American Academy of Matrimonial Lawyers. They have a law review, a law journal, and I wrote a. An article about, it's the same topic, about the ethical issues in technology. I called it "The Cyborgs Are Coming." The cyborgs are coming.
Okay.
It's, you know, look, this topic grows as technology advances. The ethical concerns continue to grow, and lawyers are most concerned about it because they've got this interesting dynamic. They want to stay technologically advanced. They have all of the tech gurus that are telling them that they need to adopt the next technology. But the code that we have was written at a time mostly before all of these technological advances existed. And even when they try to keep up, they can't, because you can't keep pace with the quick pace of technology. So what ends up happening is that we usually learn from either law review articles, we learn from, most of the time we learn is when someone takes one from the team, the disciplinary actions, you know? So lawyers are really, really concerned about this. And that's why I wrote the book, that's why I wrote the law review article, and that's why it seems that that's what most people want to hear about.
Now this book fascinates me, because when you're going to combine Facebook and social media with mistakes and things that you probably shouldn't have posted, I am thinking this is a treatise, maybe it's 20 volumes long. I mean, this has got to be, you've had to have a lot of material. I'm thinking the example of a person who calls in sick to work to attend, you know, let's just say the New York Yankees home opener, and then posts selfies on his Facebook page of himself at the home opener, forgetting that his boss is also one of his friends on Facebook. Not a very good idea. But do attorneys make equally as dumb mistakes when it comes to social media?
Oh, no. Attorneys are perfect.
give us a good example.
honestly, it's the same exact thing. It is the exact same thing that everyone struggles with, whether it's posting, you know, they say that they can't go to court, they need an adjournment, and then they post a picture of them, you know, a water skiing off the back of their buddy's boat the next week. You know, I mean, it's that's the kind of stuff that happens all of the time. But what's interesting about it is you would think that the book could be super, super long just because of that. But the ironic thing is that while the number of anecdotes of the way people have violated the rules are certainly numerous and could fill volumes, the actual rules and principles that they violate are a lot less, because, you know, you can't lie, you can't deceive. You know,
lie on Facebook. What's the point then? Really? What's the point?
What is it? What's left? Yeah, right. I get it.
I mean, my poor wife. I mean, she'll read about the family down the street. Let's call them the Joneses. And they took this perfect vacation to the French Riviera. They posted all these great pictures of them and their wonderfully behaved kids. And she's bummed that our life is not as perfect as the Joneses. I said, no, hon, take another look. Those aren't even their kids. They hired actors to stand in. People lie on Facebook all of the time. But I guess when it comes to your legal practice, you can't do it.
That's right. Posting pictures that says Getty Images on the bottom.
That's right. All right. Well, I also learned, and I got to tell you, this one really made me curious, because you are an attorney prosecutor. You prosecute attorneys. Now, I got to tell you, when I read that, I was fantasizing. It's like, man, would I ever love to prosecute some of my opposing counsel. How is it that you ended up with that gig?
Well, first of all, when I... You know, it's funny, because I was speaking to somebody else on the committee and they said, well, we're technically presenters, not prosecutors. And I said, you're right. You know, when we bring a grievance to trial and we file a complaint and we try it, we are technically referred to as the presenter. But I have never met a respondent attorney, a defendant attorney, who ever looked at one of us and said, wow, you really don't feel like a prosecutor. No, we're prosecuting. You can call it, you can sugarcoat it as much as you want. But that's really what we're doing. You know, I don't know why, but I remember being back in law school and just really enjoying professional responsibility.
That is the first time, Stuart, I've ever heard that statement uttered from anyone.
It's basically because I'm a loser. I mean, there's no other explanation for it. So ever since that day, I've always been, and I think it's because I'm fascinated with behavior. And that's really what we do on the ethics board. You know, I used to tell people that I sit on the ethics board because I have this altruistic desire to give back to the practice. And it's true. You know, I do. But the real truth is I just like to judge other people.
Like to sit in judgment, all right.
And that's what I get to do. So when I was practicing, I don't know how I heard about it, but I just heard that you can be on the ethics board, and I sent in my application, and they accepted it. And that was 11 years ago that I got on the board, and I've been on it ever since. And I think one of the reasons that they keep me, because, you know, it's an appointment that you have to get reappointed every year. It's like a three-year term. And I think one of the reasons that they keep me is because not only do I teach CLE, but I also teach professional responsibility at Georgetown Law. I'm on the part-time faculty there. I've been there for several years. And before that, I taught at my alma mater, Rutgers Law. So I have the educational chops to back up, you know, kind of the other stuff that I do. And I think that's one of the reasons why they keep me on that board, because I know the rules.
That's not a bad starting point, I must admit. Throw in a little bit of compassion, and hey, you make a perfect attorney prosecutor. Well, give us then, since you are a CLE performer, you are an attorney presenter / prosecutor, however you want to describe that. What would you say are the 2 to 3 most common mistakes, violations that an attorney makes that would land them in trouble? And maybe throw in a trap where an attorney, this is something an attorney might be doing and they don't realize they are violating their ethical standards. It's a trap issue. Give us some insight there.
All right. So the trap, I don't know that it's a trap, but let me tell you the three things that are honestly at the top of my list, okay? The first one is communication. You know, I often tell lawyers, I say, what do you think the quickest way to get into the attorney grievance system is? And invariably people say, taking money from your trust account. Right. And there's no question that that will clearly get you into the attorney grievance system. But the quickest way to get into the attorney grievance system is to piss off your client. That's it.
All right.
That's what it is. And the way you make them angry is by not communicating. I can't, I would be out of business from an ethics committee point of view. I'd be out of business if lawyers just communicated with their clients. Because most of the time in the cases that I investigate, the underlying thing that they're doing wrong is not the worst thing in the world, but they don't communicate. They don't explain. They don't let them know what's going on. They don't consult. It's just incredible. For me, in my experience, lack of communication, and not just about frequency, but depth of communication.
Now it sounds like, Stuart, you also moonlight as a marriage counselor. Do you also deal with people's lack of communications in other areas?
I am like a Renaissance ethics guy, Joel. Don't you understand that? I lay you down on the couch. Come tell me about your mother.
That's how we should do all the presentations from here on out. I like it.
Yeah, exactly.
All right,
So communication is the top thing. The next thing that I see a lot of problems with is a lack of supervision. You know, we don't adequately watch and guide the non-lawyer assistants in our office, whether it's our secretary, our paralegal, our tech people. Just the idea that we're not adequately supervising people in that regard, that's a big problem I see. And the
back up here. Lack of supervision. So what are those staff persons doing that is landing the attorney in trouble?
Whatever the hell they want. and that's the problem. Right? That's the problem. The way they're communicating with the clients, the lack of passing up the failure to pass along communication from a client to the lawyer, all that sort of thing. I mean, the obvious stuff like, you know, misappropriating funds in the bank accounts, which is, of course, an obvious one. But it's bigger than that. It's adopting different pieces of technology without talking to the lawyer. It's not reminding your staff to be wary of phishing emails. You know, it's that sort of thing. And it's just all, I mean, I had one case that I looked at where the secretary was supposed to file tax appeals for the lawyer. And there was a whole bunch of them they're supposed to file. And they, like, of the 20, whatever the number was, they filed 19. They missed one and the lawyer never knew about it. And the secretary never told him. And then it turned out that the person who they missed the filing for, their ability to appeal their taxes was foreclosed.
So what do you think of this case? I've stumbled on a case recently. I believe it's out of Ohio, where a lawyer was representing this guy who was divorcing his wife, and the lawyer started having an affair with the client's girlfriend. All right, you get that? Well, yeah. The lawyer's office manager starts to get suspicious, thinking, I think my boss is sleeping with the client's girlfriend, and that really ticked off. Oh, so then the office manager started doing some digging around, and yeah, her suspicions were confirmed. It's really ticked her off. Because she also happened to be the lawyer's wife. And so she was not happy with this development at all. So she took all those privileged documents and emails and communications and sent them to the other lawyer on the other side just to get back at her husband. So yes, this matter gets brought before the disciplinary panel. And you can probably guess it. Do you know what the lawyer was busted for?
Sleeping with his client.
No, they said he got that in the right order. Somehow, I have no idea how. It was failure to supervise his office because...
I'll tell you how. He was... Did I say three times? Maybe I'll say two, four times. I'll tell you how.
Hey, you're from the Jersey. You can do whatever you want.
A clear answer. I don't have to know the case and I know how he got away with it. He got away with it because he must have been sleeping with the woman before she became his client.
Right, exactly. That's what they said.
That's right.
They said he got that in the right order.
Yeah. Rule 1.8 says that it says that you can't sleep with your clients unless you're sleeping with them before they become your clients. And Joel, the ironic thing is you asked me for three things. That was the third thing.
Okay, what was the third one?
That was it. Sleeping with the client. The last several cases I've investigated have all been lawyers sleeping with their clients.
Wow.
It's an epidemic. I don't know why.
It's as if that is maybe is the thinning of the herd, natural selection. If they are too stupid to sleep with their client, then maybe they should. Yeah, that's thinning of the herd.
I don't know. I don't know. But it's not good. And it really happens just so often. It's crazy.
All right, well, let's go to my next segment called Lying in the Law, a How Not to Approach. I'm always curious as to how the public perceives the legal profession. So I'm going to just throw by two stories to you to get your thoughts on it. The first one involves Jesse Smollett's lawyers. Are you familiar with the Jesse Smollett situation?
Yes, his situation, yes. His lawyers, not so much.
Yeah, the lawyer, yeah. So he staged... this attack on him so that he can get some publicity, at least allegedly that's how it's coming out. Well, his lawyers issued this statement when Jesse Smollett was arrested. He said, "Today, we witnessed an organized law enforcement spectacle that has no place in the American legal system. The presumption of innocence, a bedrock in the search for justice, was trampled upon at the expense of Mr. Smollett and notably on the eve of the mayoral election." So here's what I want to focus on, this next statement. Mr. Smollett is a young man of impeccable character and integrity.
Wait, repeat that again. I didn't hear it. Repeat again. Mr. Smollett is what?
Is a young man of impeccable character and integrity who fiercely and solemnly maintains his innocence and feels betrayed by a system that apparently wants to skip due process and proceed directly to sentencing. So I want to focus there on the statement that Mr. Smollett is a young man of impeccable character and integrity. Now, Stuart, if you were talking to your wife and you were talking about this other person, you said, "Oh, I think this person has impeccable character, the highest integrity," and that person just concocted the kind of arrest and public thing that Jesse Smollett did. Do you think that would be an honest statement?
You know, when you start talking about someone's character. And I got to tell you, I'm sure that these lawyers thought about their statement very, very carefully before they said it. How are you going to show that that is a lie according to the rules? Let me rephrase that. I don't think you can show that it's a lie according to the rules. How are you going to show that that is, for instance, like according to, what is it, 4.1, I'm going off the top of my head, a material misstatement of fact or law? It's not a statement of law. Is it a statement of fact that he has an impeccable character? How do you disprove that?
See, I asked the question and you immediately went to ethics. How can we prove But see, that is, I want to focus on something different now. For the public's perception, do you think that is an honest statement? Would that pass muster with your mother? Would your mother say,
you know what?
You vouched for this guy's character, and look what you knew. You're not, you aren't playing straight with me.
Yeah, but you know what? You know why I think the public would be okay with it? Because number one, they would all see what the public's reaction, I think, and my mother in particular, my mother's reaction would be, Stuart, are you hungry? That's all she ever thinks of. That's so that would be my mother's probably not the best one to bring into conversation.
All right.
But with everybody else, I
by
think
the way,
what they say,
just based upon that and nothing else, I want to meet your mother. I gotta tell you what, if she cares about feeding, I want to meet your mother. But go on.
Here, my mother, you know what my mother would say to you right now? We're not, I can't even see what you're wearing, Joel. And my mother would say, Joel, go put on a jacket. It's cold.
All right.
So, but what I think my mother and everybody else says when they hear that statement is, you know what? That's exactly what I expect him to say. I expect my lawyer to have my back. And that's what the lawyer's doing. The lawyer's got his back. Nobody expects him to come up and say, you know what? Jesse Smollett is a deranged person who's really damaged and made a big, big mistake. And we really hope that you're going to be nice to him.
So what you're just saying is you expect your lawyer to lie for the client, because there is no way if you were to tell someone, if you were to vouch for this person's character, let's just say in a job interview, oh, this guy has impeccable character. And then the person finds out what actually happened. That same person is going to go back to you and say, Stuart, you weren't playing squarely with me here. Clearly, you're trying to lead me down the wrong path. Let me give you a different example here. Robert Kraft. Do you know who Robert Kraft is?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He was the owner, or is the owner, for the New England Patriots. Yep. Was caught on videotape in some massage parlor. I don't know how you even describe these places down there in South Florida. Apparently doing some sexual activity with a misogynist. I'm not sure you even use that word correctly, but nonetheless was caught on videotape.
Misogynist.
No. What is the term I'm looking for? Person who gets a massage,
Masseuse.
Oh, yeah. Apparently, he was caught on videotape with a masseuse engaging in sexual activity, and so was arrested, apparently with a sting of 20, 30 other guys, was arrested for this. His lawyer issues this statement. We categorically deny that Mr. Kraft engaged in any illegal activity. Again, from the perspective of the public, how is that not dishonest?
But you don't know what happened, Joel. You don't know what happened. You don't know the facts. All you know is the guy got arrested. You don't know anything about what happened. Why can't he make the claim that he was not engaged? If Kraft is going to go on the stand and say, I don't care what you heard in the news. I don't care what you heard in this. This is what I did, X, Y, and Z. And none of those things are illegal. And everything I was arrested for was – I mean, cops sometimes arrest people and it turns out that they didn't do what they got arrested for. So that's what the lawyer's saying.
All right. I hear
you know,
saying.
And what about – and go back to Jesse Smollett, right? And I'm just – you know, for the purpose of our conversation, I'm playing devil's advocate here, you know? I mean, you could – just like every lawyer, we could argue both sides of the equation.
Right, that's why.
Right? But go back to Jesse Smollett, right? And you started talking about how the lawyer said that he's an impeccable character, and yet look what he did. And I guess one of my responses is, can't someone of outstanding impeccable character still make a mistake, even if it's a really bad mistake? Why can't we say that someone has excellent character and had a momentary lapse of judgment, even if it was a terrible lapse of judgment? It can be said, can it?
All right, Stuart, you know what my response to that is?
Nope, tell me.
I want to hire you as my attorney. You I like how you think, man. I hear you saying. Yeah, you're right. That is a good explanation of that statement. He is a person of impeccable character who made a mistake.
I don't really know what happened aside from happened in the papers, but I can see why lawyers say what they say on behalf of their clients. It's what we do and I don't think of it as being a mercenary. I don't think of it as being someone who makes misrepresentations. What I think about it is having somebody who is in a very vulnerable situation and needs help. And that's what we do. Now, of course, if you know that someone did something and you outright make a lie, well, then you've crossed the line and that's bad. But when you've got someone who's had behavior that is questionable, that whatever, I mean, your job is to try to help them.
I like it. I think, Stuart, I think you hit the nail on the head there. Sorry for that cliche, but I think you've nailed it. All right, let's move on here to our next lawyer/lightning round. I want to ask you some questions, just kind of get your quick response to them. All right, start off with your favorite lawyer movie. What is it?
I'm sorry, my favorite lawyer what?
Movie.
Movie? My Cousin Vinny.
I got to tell you, 99.9% of all responses say My Cousin Vinny.
It's got to be.
What is it about that movie? I agree. It's my favorite movie. What about that movie that makes us all love it? Is it Marissa Tomei? I think it's Marissa Tomei.
My biological clock is ticking like this, you know, right?
I love that line.
I don't know what it is. It's, you know what it is? It's a good story. It's not too deep. You know, there's like, it's not going to make you upset. There's no real big political angle in it either way. I mean, don't get me wrong, they're on trial for murder, but you know it's a comedy, so you don't take it too seriously, you know? And all of the characters there are just so perfect.
They are.
Every one of them is perfect. Like, you know that guy, I don't know the actor's name who plays the prosecutor when he's doing the whatever in his direct, I guess, and he says, and the guy says, and those two tires, oh, what kind of tires are those? They're identical. And he goes,
That's right. You know? I love that.
Like every one of those people, it's great writing. It's a good story. And every one of those actors just nailed the part.
All right. Now, since you're from the northeast portion of this country, what is a Ute?
A Ute? Yeah. a Ute. Listen, the unofficial slogan of New Jersey is, how you doing? You know, how you doing? And, right. And actually the second official one is, what are you kidding me? So, you know, that's the way we speak. We don't exactly enunciate. And, you know, when someone says, did you eat yet? Usually comes out with as G yet. So
right.
When someone says the Ute, he's just leaving the H off.
Right, that's it.
That's what it is.
It probably took you a while to even get that joke. Yeah. Ute. I got it. Ute. All right. How about this one? What was Colonel Jessup's response when Lieutenant Caffrey demanded, I want the truth?
You can't handle the truth!
Oh, man, you delivered that line with precision. I love it!
Did you see my video on that?
No!
Oh, my God, you got to go back and watch the video. It's on my – if you go to my – I don't know if I put it on my YouTube station because I started my YouTube channel after we recorded that video. You said you spoke to Sean Carter before, right?
Yeah.
Right. So Sean and I have known each other for years. Sean and I met when I first started in this business. He was already in it for a couple of years. And he's been like a mentor to me throughout my career. And when we first started, we put together a couple of videos that we fused into a program that we did. And one of the things is he wrote the script to a parody of that scene.
Okay.
You can handle the truth. And I acted it. So you got. I'll send you the link. Maybe I gotta post it. But anyway, it's basically you can't handle the truth, and we go into how lawyers, you know, you want me telling those lies. You need me telling those lies.
All right. Well, you post it, and then I will put that in the show notes for this podcast as well because I can't wait to see that you and Sean Carter. That has got to be hilarious.
Well, Sean's not in it. This was one thing where it's only me in that role, but he wrote the script.
Azil, you'll appreciate this. I did this bit called Lamborghini Lawyer, while driving through drive-thrus in Kansas City. My friend's Lamborghini, just asking questions. And that's one of the questions I asked was, what was the response? And you know what this one lady told me? I said, what was the response when Lieutenant Caffrey demanded, I want the truth? And she said, and nothing but the truth? Oh, my goodness. We're old. We are old.
But how old was she?
Oh, yeah, 18,
that's
19.
That's the problem.
I know. She'd never seen that movie.
Joel, in about 5 years, we're not going to have anything to talk about at our programs because no one's going to know any of our references.
I'm doing my shtick at the old folks' home next year, I think. Only place I'm going to get my jokes. All right. Favorite Supreme Court justice?
Favorite Supreme Court justice. Okay, so now I'm going to tell you the answer, and I'm not getting political.
All right.
I teach, not only do I teach legal ethics, but I also teach legal writing. I teach legal writing in CLE programs, and I actually also teach legal writing to undergraduates at Rutgers as an adjunct there. But in my legal writing program, I talk about how I have a man crush on Justice Gorsuch.
Okay.
And the reason is not because of anything he writes substantively, but the style of his writing is awesome. He writes in plain English. He uses contractions. He uses slang. He uses alliteration. I just love the style that he uses for writing. And like I said, it's not political because I honestly don't I'm not a student of the court in any way, but I just love the way he writes.
Fascinating. Did you know at the Supreme Court, they have a tradition, a hazing tradition, where the newest justice has to serve as the chairperson for the Supreme Court cafeteria committee? Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Is that really a wise idea? You are going to have the justice from Colorado being in charge of the Supreme Court brownie platter. I'm just not seeing that as being the best idea, but nonetheless, he is your favorite justice. All right, I like that. I like that. All right, how about this one? If you were not a lawyer, what would you be doing?
I would have been a journalist.
Journalist?
That's what that's what I think I would have done. If I wasn't a lawyer, I'd be a journalist.
Of the fake news kind? Or what kind of journalist?
Well, of course, fake news. I mean, what else is there? Is there anything else? No, I'm just kidding. I don't know. You know, I always liked to write, and I took journalism classes in college, and I was going that way, and then I switched to the law, and people asked me why I became a lawyer, and the answer is because my father told me I wanted to be one.
That's right.
And I think that if I wouldn't have been directed in that regard, I probably would have just stayed with journalism. I like the idea of reporting on the latest thing that's going on. You know, I just like that idea of the bang bang kind of thing about how something happens, you report on it, and people are talking about it. There's something I find very exciting about that.
Well, I ask that question to my class all the time, and one response I got from an attorney when I said, "What would you be doing if you were not a lawyer?" And he thought about it. He goes, "You know what? I'd be Batman." But you know, that's journalist, Batman, whatever. It's all good. It's all hypothetical. All right, I gave you a heads up early on, but now, what is your favorite lawyer joke?
I tell you, I thought about it because you said that, and I don't have one. I really don't. I mean, the only thing I could think of is, did you ever hear about the lawyer, who stopped having sex with his client? And no, and neither did I. You know, that's
okay, that is bad.
That's the closest I can come because I don't know.
All right, that's a mic drop one. I was going to fill in for you, but no, that one delivered, so I'm going to go with that one. All right, lastly here, I my concept here of this podcast is debriefing the law because there is freedom in going commando. Now, the whole idea there is it's a double entendre, right? Debriefing the law. We're going to break down the law.
I got it.
You know, but it's also, have you ever watched Seinfeld?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Listen, if you've seen Seinfeld, you've seen half of my family at one time or another.
All right. I like it. Well, there's one episode, I'm sure you saw it, where Seinfeld realized that Kramer was going commando. And boy, did it freak him out. Because you mean the only thing between you and me is a thin layer of cloth or whatever? And so Kramer said, Jerry, I'm out there and I'm loving every minute of it. Well, I don't really want to know if you're going commando, but here's the thought. When you understand the limitations of the law, the screwed up individuals that are processing the legal system, and the good, well-intentioned people as well, there is freedom in that. There is freedom in understanding the law in its entirety, in its ugly underbelly. So I always want to throw that out there to you. What is your response to that concept? There is freedom in going commando.
There's freedom in going commando. So what you're saying is that I don't quite follow. So are you saying that there's some sort of liberating feeling that you get from knowing, from accepting the practice, warts and all?
Yes, by knowing the full range of the law. So what its intentions, its purposes, and then also some of the limitations of the law. There's freedom in that. I'm just curious about your initial response to that concept of when you fully understand the law, warts and all, and there's a lot of good, obviously, with the law. There is freedom in that.
Yeah, there is. But you know something? I also see, I see the conflict in that. I know there's freedom in it, and I see the conflict in that. And what I mean by that is I've always felt conflicted between – that there's been a conflict between the practice and the public, because the public will never really be able to understand warts and all. They just can't. You really have to study it to understand it. And some of the things that seem contradictory to the public make absolute sense when you really understand, when you go commando and when you understand what the law is really about. And I think that all of us in the practice feel pretty comfortable with the majority of the rules and regulations and concepts that we have. But a lot of the public, they don't. And a lot of the public will never feel that way. And it seems sometimes like you're always having the same conversation with someone, with a lay person, explaining to them why they do it this way, why we have to do this that way, and why it makes sense. So while I understand and agree that the system is a really, really good system, and while, of course, every system could be tweaked somewhat, that by and large, it's good, I find it incredibly frustrating to have to constantly explain that to members of the to lay people.
That's right. Well, my take is, when you understand the limitations of the law, there is freedom to then act justly, walk humbly, and love one another, in essence. A true story on a previous podcast, and also I've known this guy for quite some time, but he tells a story where in the middle of the night, he thought his appendix was bursting. It's just like, this immense pain was coming up. So he wakes up his wife, says, "Hun, I think my appendix is bursting. Can you drive me to the hospital?" So it's in the middle of the night, and she gets in the car, and they're driving to the hospital, and he is just writhing in pain. She comes up to a stoplight, and she stops at the stoplight. It's the middle of the freaking night. There is not a soul anywhere, and she just sits and waits. He's like, "Hun, run the stoplight. We have to go to the hospital." She goes, no, it's a stoplight. It's red. I can't run a red light." And so I tell that story for a couple of reasons. One, the stoplight laws obviously are meant for good. We would not want to drive around town if there were not traffic laws and traffic lights. But in the middle of the night, when your husband's appendix is bursting, maybe there's a higher, more loving response to that law. But nonetheless, that is our take.
Yeah, or maybe she was trying to get that thing to burst, and it was all part of a larger plan that we just don't know about.
Now, that only can come from a New Jersey person. I had never thought of that.
That's right. She was probably on a back road, a county road somewhere near a bunch of reeds, and she figured, hey, if this happens, we'll just dump him right here.
The fact that her life insurance policy was in the back seat probably did not play into that, but yeah, I hear what you're saying. All right, well, thank you so much, Stuart, for coming on. I appreciate it, and good luck at doing your presentations with attorneys and as a CLE performer.
It's my pleasure. Thanks so much for the time.
Well, thank you for listening to today's podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a 5-star review. If you do not enjoy this podcast, please ignore I ever said anything. We do need your love and help to help us continue highlighting the funnier side of the law. I want to give a special shout out to our Vice President of Operations, Wendy Oster, without whom, well, this entire operation would be a mess, and I'd have to get a real job. Our marketing team, Redbird Solutions, and Leanne Holmberg for spreading the good word about us. Sean Wynn and 15.5 Features for making me sound way better than I actually do. And Ryan Kuhn and Paul Kuhn of Triplicity Marketing for our technical and computer support.